So welcome everyone to No Surprises Leadership, how 20 minutes a month can prevent brush fires from becoming wildfires. And I'm Justin Bader with the Principal Center, and I'm now going to turn it over to our presenters, Jeff Smith and my longtime friend, Dr. Jim Henderson. So gentlemen, welcome and take it away.
Listen, it's great to be with all of you. Appreciate the time from Justin to be able to share this check-in system that in fact does take about 20 minutes a month, and it's amazing what it can provide for you in terms of the people you supervise and lead. I did ask my colleague Jeff to work with me today because he works as an educator. I don't, but I work with other educators, but Jeff can help me translate some of this into your world. But what we call the 3Q check-in system is basically built on three questions that we've discovered can unlock a lot of information if they're asked consistently, kind of like a key. Those three questions are, how are you? How are we? How can I help? And like a lot of life, it's all about how you package something. It's not, you know, salt is great, salt shakers are better, because that's how you get salt distributed. But this idea 3Q started originally because my son is a restaurateur in Seattle, and he was opening several restaurants simultaneously, and he needed something like a people development method that could be done in under 4 minutes. Why 4 minutes? Because in the restaurant business, I'm sure some of you must have at some time worked as servers. Everything's moving quickly. It's fairly transient. There's no time for meetings. And there's basically no motive except money. And so if people can get more, they'll go places, other places where the opportunity are. So this isn't a place where you can have board meetings or long talks. You have to get things done fairly quickly. I equate it more like being pirates and trying to organize a bunch of pirates. So we had to come up with a system where things could happen quickly, because the only option you have in that environment pretty much is relationship. It's the only thing that will give you an edge. Interestingly, it's part of what we now call a kind of a classic gig economy, except it's done in a building. But the same thing is true as moving into more institutional settings, I would argue. One of my daughters is a psychiatric nurse practitioner for the last 15 years. And she and I, of course, talk a lot about leadership and what she's experiencing. And it turns out that in her environment, she happens to be in a business and in a career path where she can pretty much choose where she wants to work and when she wants to work. So that means she can leave if not pleasant. And one thing that I discovered from her was that people, she rarely left a job because of the work. And she works in very difficult situations, psychotic people, challenging situations. But generally, she never left because of that. She left because of the lack of a relationship with a manager or supervisor. And she stayed in some very difficult situations because of a relationship and situation. So I'm also a musician, and in that role, you want to get to me the next slide, Jeff?
It didn't go. It should be.
I'm not seeing it. Okay, you ready?
I'm showing
Okay, good. I'm going to go with you. Thank you. Forgive the low tech. Here we go. I got you. I see what I was doing wrong. Okay. When I was in high school, I studied the flute. And as part of that, I had to rehearse scales. It's a boring, tedious thing unless you love what you're doing. Eventually, I played in bands. I played the bass. And when you do that, it's the same thing. You rehearse figures. And then I eventually would rehearse bands. And I became generally the arranger or the leader of a band. Excuse me. So in that role, I would make people play things until they hated it. Because that was the only way you could remember it when you got under pressure live and you had hundreds of people staring at you and you were forgetting what you're supposed to be doing. So I wanted to come up with a system in this check-in system that didn't require so much talent as it did persistence. And I wanted it to be something that didn't require you or your employee to be a rock star. I didn't want it based on charismatic behaviors or intuitive, the ability to read, have psychological intuition, that type of thing. I didn't want you to have to rely solely on body language. I want it to be doable and scalable. And so that's why we call it a system, because in a system, it's something anyone can use. And if they use it consistently, they will grow as a leader, and they'll also grow the people they supervise. Just a side story, one of the people that I coach, she self-admittedly said, I'm not great at reading body language. But she told me that over time, she started to, like, and I'm talking now after 2 or 3 years, she started to be able to read people's body language in a way, because the 3Q check-in system essentially puts you as the supervisor in the position of listening and observing. And so she actually acquired that skill over time, one that she thought she didn't have. Jeff, you want to talk to us about the chessboard looking at?
Yeah, so we don't have to talk about exponential growth. Most of us are living with it with coronavirus, but 3Q builds over time. One of the things that we've seen in the last couple of years is the consistency of the meetings is the power of it. And just to give you a quick, you know, math, Jim doesn't do the math. He does the music and the other stuff. But you think of a guy who invented chess, right? When the story goes that the emperor of Persia, when he found out about the game, wanted to reward the inventor, right? And so the inventor was a smart guy and said, well, here's the deal. I'll take one grain of rice on the first square, and then you double it every day all the way through the board. And the Persian emperor thinks he's getting a deal, right? One grain, then two, then four. But about halfway through the board, right, day 9, you're at over 262,000 grains of rice, and it just goes up exponentially from there. And 3Q, in a similar way, at least from our experience with it the last few years, builds in the same sort of exponential way.
So consistency becomes the key in this process. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second. But we're talking about you meeting with an employee, someone who reports to you, you're supervising, you're managing, once a month for about 20 minutes. And that investment over time, it can affect your organization exponentially. One of the people that I work with supervises, she has a number of people that report, but she does 10 3Qs a month. She's the head of the division. The consistency of her practice has helped her build trust over the years, resulting in key employees not leaving, which may be of interest to you because it seems to be a challenge for us at times. In her business, it's a nonprofit, so she can't compete on money. So she has to compete on relationship. And one of the other people that I work with in her organization, who essentially runs 24 units and does their social work, oversees social workers in 24 different locations, was offered a better job. And it's a younger guy, and so it was a career move. And asked me what I thought about taking it. I said, it makes sense that you should take it at this point in your life. And that's what you like to do. I don't have any objection to that. And then a month later, when I was doing a coaching call with him, it turned out he decided not to leave. And I asked him why. And he said, well, he said, because I realized that anywhere I go is going to be dysfunctional. And at least here we talk about our dysfunction. And so that actually kept him, and that saved the divisional leader thousands of dollars by not having to replace him. What we've discovered is it takes about 3 check-ins, and we use the word check-ins rather than meetings because it's just, that's actually what we're doing. For people to begin to trust that you're going to really listen to them. This is an exercise where leaders listen to their employees, not vice versa, where we take time, block it out, and discipline ourselves, structure it in a scripted way, where people are, we're attending to people. It takes about 3 times before they trust you because most people are not called into consistent one-on-ones, first of all. Secondly, if they are called into one-on-ones, they've generally been trained by our organizational systems to associate it with a review or a problem. or some challenge. Also, I'm not talking here about all staff meetings or groups. These are literally one-on-ones. The consistency then becomes the secret sauce. In terms of what's most important, it turns out that consistency supersedes content and connection every time. We tend to talk about this magical thing of making a connection. It's in the same category of reading body language or being intuitive. Some of us have that. I have that. But a lot of people don't have that. There's a lot of things I don't have. I don't have math skills like Jeff mentioned earlier, but I am a musician, so I do have that. So the issue of consistency can do wonders in terms of overriding that. So the quality of a connection is as important as, I'm sorry, the quality of connection is not as important as consistency of connection. Think of if you, sometimes I correlate for people, 3Q is more like, and associated with your home or where you live, it's more like vacuuming. It's kind of in that category. You know, it's something that we don't look forward to, but we do, and we can do it fairly quickly, rather than we tend to think of sometimes connections as more correlated to like remodeling our house. We have to have a big meeting or something. We tend to idealize connections.
Yep. Can I jump in there, Jim?
Please.
Because any of our members who've been through the Instructional Leadership Challenge or any of my programs will recognize that note of consistency, of frequency, rather than quality. And I think that talking about that connection or that overlap in perspective might have been, I think, what initially got us talking together again after many years of knowing each other and then, you know, getting involved in different unrelated projects. But I think when I saw that you had that same belief and that same approach, that it's the frequency, it's the consistency, rather than having this perfect kind of conversation. I think we put so much effort in education into getting things right, getting things perfect, getting things into this kind of idealized state. And too often it's so demanding and so, you know, it's such a high bar that we set for ourselves that we end up just not doing it. And I think that's a missed opportunity. So I really appreciate what you're saying here about consistency.
Well, another way to play off that high bar metaphor is that we feel like we buried the bar so low, you need a metal detector to locate it. So the goal here is to make this doable so that all of us ordinary folks can participate. And so it's an interesting point. I've learned a lot, actually, having developed this and watching its effectiveness as it relates to this issue.
Well, and the other thing that I'll throw in, it's kind of similar to Justin's comment, is the mundaneness of it, like the day-to-day of it, lets you trust the person you're having the meeting with, right? Often in education, at least from the teacher side, if it's a real slick thing, right, or idealized, the word you're using, Justin, we tend to go, well, wait a minute, what's behind, like there's a certain amount of skepticism, at least and staffs that I've worked in over the years. Whereas if it's just a principal sitting down with me and a pad of paper and he's writing down or she's writing down the things I'm saying, that's over time, that is much, much more proactive and profound, right, than some sort of idealized perfect communication, whatever that may look like.
Yeah. So that's a very important part, you know, for all of you to grasp here, that what Jeff just said is literally how it looks. And we'll show you the format, how it looks. But it literally is sitting down with a little notebook and asking, how are you? How are we? How can I help? And then taking notes. One of my favorite thinkers puts the issue of consistency in focus with this advice. His name is Joey Reimar. He wrote a book called Thinking for a Living. And he said, spend time with your employees because your time is part of their salary. It's not a bonus. And I can't reiterate that enough, that I feel like we sometimes feel like we're doing people a favor by giving them our time when actually it's part of our job. So let's go to the next one, Jeff. Good. Tom Friedman, the New York Times journalist, wrote The Earth is Flat and several other important books. He wrote this: those in power never think about it. Those without power think about it all the time. If you've been if you're a normal human being, you've been in both positions. You've been without power and you think about it all the time. How are you going to get it? Sometimes this is in the context of relationships. Sometimes it's in context of work. Sometimes it's in sports, economically, race, gender. It's because constantly we're aware that we don't have as much power as somebody else. And so we don't know how to raise our hand and get attention. While the person in power is largely oblivious. That could be us in a classroom. It could be me talking about what I'm talking about now. We're like fish swimming and we don't know we're in an aquarium. And so it's important that basically 3Q check-in is a way of sharing power. And it's a way of disciplining and structuring ourselves so that we do that, not just by doing things that we like to do managing by walking around and that type of thing, but to have a predictable time when people know they're going to meet with us. And so what this means is that if you're in a position, you have a department or you're leading a school or you have that type, if you are, you're the one that decides if this thing works. It only works when the person at the top is practicing along with the supervisors and managers. Meaning that if you don't have any intention of actually participating in the system, it's not going to do you any good and you really don't even need to waste your time testing it. But if you do have 20 minutes a month to devote to 3 to 5 people you depend on to get your work done, then this system can provide you organizational results. I'm talking literally about 3 hours a month to invest in relationship development with 3 to 5 people. That's a system you can use to get that done. I don't know if you know the story of Radar, but it was developed kind of like the coronavirus. Things are getting invented. You know, Zoom went from 10 million users to 200 million users in 3 months. What if that happened in your building? Or, I mean, just think of the pressure that was put on the system. They've done incredibly well considering, you know, I have a lot of Zoom meetings and I was photobombed right there at the beginning. So I went through that whole thing that people talk about. And we survived it and we figured out how to lock the doors and fix things and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, so it's necessity is the mother of invention. In World War II, they realized that when Germany was wanting to bomb England around that time, besides the whole encryption thing that was going on, somebody created radar. And so they were able to use radar to spot the bombers coming in, which really only gave them 30 minutes lead time, but it also gave them 30 minutes lead time. And so that meant they could get in the air and they ended up winning. So radar is fascinating. So I've discovered the 3Q is like radar. It lets you spot blips before they become bombs. You can get eyes on the horizon. You can get problems because when you're consistently, if you think about radar, it's just zoom, 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 it's going around. 3Q system is like that in an organization. You spot things on the horizon because of your consistency and you start seeing problems in brush fire before they becomes wildfire. Rather than just when a lot of people experience it when they walk in the door. So that is one of the benefits of being able to spot problems, but also on the converse, you get to spot talent. What if you had eyes on potential that's currently out of your view? And you could spot things. This comes up frequently when I'm doing coaching calls with 3Q leaders. They're telling me about people they've spotted. And actually, they've been able to do hiring from within instead of outside because they didn't realize somebody had accounting skills that was two departments over because they didn't know they existed. But with 3Q, they're able to spot that. So, Jeff?
So time's our fiercest opponent, and all of you as principals obviously live in that world of time and what you can do. And what you decide to do with yours is the most important decision that you make. The research that that I have, I'm in the Fielding graduate program for a doctorate, and one of the things I read the other day was that it was a study of elementary principals, somewhere in the Southwest, and they make, on average, the elementary principal makes 400 separate decisions per day, was the average. And one quick story, I had a colleague a couple months ago ask, as some teachers do, you know, what's the principal do all day? And I kind of laughed because I see his world a lot. And so I got her a sub for the morning so that she could job shadow him, like from 8 to, you know, lunchtime. And it was fascinating to hear her talk afterwards, because we'd had something probably very similar to your worlds. We had something where some kid in the community, not at our school, but in the community, had put something on, you know, social media over the weekend that he was going to take out somebody else. So there was, the police were looking for this kid across the, you know, island that we live on here, and parents were coming in, should they send their kids to school? I mean, it's just one of those classic principal, no matter what my boss Louie had on his schedule, it was going to go sideways that day, right? And this teacher was in some of those meetings and hearing some of those phone calls, and she came back a couple days later, she said, I had no idea what that day looked like. And I'm like, well, that's a pretty typical, you know, she wanted to know if that was a typical day. And I thought, yeah, I said, yeah, I think that's a pretty typical day. So I think one of the things that's really helpful on 3Q is we know you're not sitting in your office waiting for things to do, right? Every one of you is out there in many ways, the main policy person, and has connections to however many stakeholders in your system. But we found it's one of the most effective people development kinds of ways. So it's the lever really that lets you move your whole world, because the teachers are the ones on the front lines with those kids. And that's what you get graded on, right? That's what you get measured on, is the students. Back to you, Anderson.
Early in my career, I was in a role of leadership development for an organization that had about 100 employees. And I was tasked with creating a system and finding a way of helping develop leaders. And in that environment, the standard way was to do it through all staff meetings, bring in famous motivational speakers, and basically write up plans that nobody had to execute on. And so I began to wonder what was going on. So I wandered around and started talking. There were about 25 people that were leading the rest of the organization in that, out of that 100. And so I built relationships with them, and through that began to structure a way of checking in with them. And some of this grew out of that desire as well in the corporate environment. And what was fascinating to me is that if I asked most people today, particularly large organizations, hey, what's the most important part of your business? They would say, well, their people are, meaning their employees. And then if I said, well, let me ask you, if you had permission and I asked you to show me your books, how you spend your money, and you had permission, could you show that to me? Most people, yeah, let me get accounting, blah, blah, blah. And they'd open an Excel spreadsheet and they show me their, the P&L and all of that. And then if I said to them, can you show me how you spend your relational time with these people that are so important, apparently more important than the money, and nobody has ever been able to show me their people books. And so it occurred to me, why don't we create a system that's more like people books, where we had some way of measuring and tracking who we're spending time with? Because the difficulty here, and some of this may be going through your mind, is who should I spend this time with? And that's an important distinction, because it's like Joey Remar said, it's not their job to figure that out. That's actually your job, that's part of their salary, and it's not a bonus. We sometimes feel as if, I mean, think about this, that, the people that supervise you, how often they check in with you. How consistent is that? What if they checked in? What if they asked you once a month, how are we? I mean, it's rare. And part of the how are we is you would find yourself asking to your employee, how could I be a better boss? That takes a lot of courage and focus and discipline. So, you want to find the people that are you're supervising that are going to really value that engagement. And just one of the things that's occurred to me, and I have been, I'm not a person who's worked in corporate life a great deal, but I coach people in corporate life, and I also have participated in it enough to see it. And I'm familiar with this department called Human Resources, which sounds very approachable, but for the most part, my experience says it's really about policy, benefits, problems, that type of thing. And what I was wondering, if we could start a Department of Humane Resources, you know, maybe you could sit next to Human Resources. Because my observation, and I don't know if this is a new thing, but it seems that more and more people are refusing to check their humanity at the door, and they still want to be treated as a person. So 3Q check-in system is designed to allow humanity to be included in our work life in a structured way that benefits the organization. Thanks so much for your time.
All right. So we had a couple people asking in the comments what the questions were. So I think I put that back in the chat. So again, they are, how are you, how are we, and how can I help? And Jim or Jeff, I wonder if you want to say a little bit more about the how are we question. Talk to me about what we're diagnosing there, or what we're seeking information on when we ask how are we.
So most of a life is about sharing power. It's about, I have you, for example, you have opened the door for me to be in this environment, right? To these people that you've cultivated a relationship with. And so you're sharing power with me, with us right now, and with them. And they're also sharing power with you because they're basically attending to this and trusting you. So there's an exchange of power going on constantly. And in 3Q check-in, one of the ways we formalize that is by simply saying the person with power saying to the person who ostensibly has less power, how are we? And the we includes you and I personally, but it also includes how are you with the organization. So for example, I could say, are we, in colloquial, I'd say, are we good? You know, that's fast way of saying it. And then, yeah, we're good. Well, then how are you with the whole organization, the direction we're going? You have any questions about that? And so there's I can show you the structure about how this works, but basically that's what it's addressing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And Jim, if I could jump in, I think the one thing I've seen you do in coaching people who are doing this is how to dig in deeper to, like, when someone says, oh, we're fine. Like, fine isn't actually actionable, right? It might be what they think is, but what we've seen is over a couple of meetings, you have that trust, and all of a sudden you go, okay, Justin, what do you mean by fine, right? Is there a place where we're not fine? Like, if the trust starts to build, then that where are we or how are we question is sometimes the most powerful one out of the three.
One of the challenges is always to deliver attention. This is basically an attention delivering device, because attention is, human beings are attention junkies. And so when you deliver it, they wait for it. So this is not designed to be therapy. Also, it is done in the context of an organization. We remain in the context of our mission goals, our organizational direction. It doesn't turn into a counseling session, nor a review. So there's part of the time parameters that if you're going past 20 minutes, it's probably turning into a counseling session, you know, or a review and or an operational meeting. So none of those things are included in this thing. This is a different thing than a review, an operation meeting, or counseling.
Yeah, I appreciate that distinction.
But again, that's the power of it, right? We spend, at least as administrators and teachers, we spend about 90% of our interactions on operational stuff, which is important, but isn't relational, right? That's the interesting piece to it, is the difference between those two things.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that's a great distinction, and also one that I think it's easy for us as instructional leaders to say, well, you know, I really need to prioritize being an instructional leader. So, you know, I don't want to get bogged down with operational things. So please don't waste my time with that. Send me an email. But sometimes I feel like the way that people feel supported, the way they feel respected, is to have that access to us for operational support. And, you know, I think certainly in terms of my, executive director that I reported to, Phil, if you're out there, Phil, one of the things that I really appreciated and respected about his way of leading and of supervising me as a principal was that he saw it as one of kind of clearing the way for me, of running interference. If I needed, an issue to be resolved, even if it was operational, it was not about teacher evaluations, it was not about curriculum, you know, no matter what it was, having the opportunity to bring that up and say, I need help with this, it just made me feel incredibly supported. So good stuff there.
Well, the other thing I'll throw in there, the best person I ever worked for was an assistant superintendent several years ago. And she set up a Friday meeting, right? It was a standing meeting. And I had no idea the problems I was going to run into in this, because I was an instructional coach with some Microsoft money. But I knew every Friday, right? I could sit down with Lynn, and very similar to what you're saying, Justin, I could say, okay, such and such principal blew me off. What do I do? And she would say, but it was sitting there all the time, right? That operational and relational, I think they bleed into each other if you're paying attention or if the leader's paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Another question we've gotten from David and Alma are both asking about the number of people. I think in our profession, specifically when it comes to principals and teachers, our span of supervision is out of whack. I mean, just across the board in the profession, we are weird in that it is routine for principals to have 30 to 50 direct reports. And just depending on how assistant principals are used, if there are assistant principals, it can be even more extreme than that in some cases. Whereas in the corporate world, typically, you know, we've got the two pizza rule, maybe, you know, 5 to 10 to 12 direct reports is more typical. Does this work? Does it work to sit down with every staff member that you work with once a month for 20 minutes if you have 20, 30, 50 staff members that report to you?
So one of the ways to, let's go down sort of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs idea, you know, who is it that if they walked out, if they gave you the 2-week notice, would create a problem for you? You know, start with that person. Another question is, who is it that you would like to develop? A lot of our work is reactive instead of proactive. It's the problem solving rather than, you know, so we don't have time to look at someone and say, I want to focus on that person. So as a leader, you're going to have to choose. The functional reality is that, and I don't mean this, I don't know what the word supervising means in your world, but the idea of supervising 30 people, it doesn't seem like a concept that's workable, I mean, by your own admission. So at any rate, I would say you inevitably, I have, again, one of the division leaders I work with, she has 10 people. She has 100 employees, but she has 10 people that she has chosen to do 3Q with. And that's honestly about the max a person can do this system with on a monthly basis, in my opinion. This is not a small group action. Someone asked about that. This is a one-on-one system, the unique aspect of this. So it does fall to you as the leader to make the determination. You can literally meet, if you're disciplined, you can meet with 2-3 people a week like this. And honestly, these things become routinized to where you're sometimes in 15, 20 minutes because of the consistency, because the mundaneness of it, people know what you're going to say. So if somebody asks about, you tell the questions ahead of time. Once people hear these, it's like an earworm. It's in their head. And they do come waiting for you to ask the questions. So you don't have to over-prep people. So I would say, if you're good at this, you can get between 5 and 10 people a month in your check-in system. Here's the other thing though, that typically when I coach people, because that's part of the process, is that I personally coach people who lead check-ins, I notice they could be doing this work through other people, because part of this process is to be developing others. So the simplicity of the model, the reason it's structured, the reason it's scripted, is so it's not based on episodic, intermittent, personality-driven leadership, which is what we've all become accustomed to. And it simply is not scalable, and it's not healthy. In fact, most great organizations are not led by charismatic people. You know, they're led by leaders who get their work done quietly. And so if you had 30 people and I was working with you, I would probably try and help you find another 3 or 4 people in that 30 who could be doing check-ins themselves, you know, with other people. That's how it works. Right. That's how you scale it.
And I would say that at least in our world, the world I'm in, we're trying to develop those, what, you know, you can call them department heads. You can call them, right? Because there's no way to actually meet with 30 people on a regular basis and do all the other 400,000 things that a principal has to do, right? That's just not physically possible. So what we're, and I think you're seeing this trend all over, the bigger the school gets, the more, whether it's formal or not, the more the principal has, you know, it's a hierarchy, whether it's written down or not. And one of the things that I think we've tried to say to people is, A, who's the one you can't lose, like Jim was saying, that will just wreck your staff or you'd have months of reconstruction. And then who's somebody that they clearly need more attention, but they could be a rock star, right? They could end up at your school for the next 25 years and lead a department or whatever. Like, just take those two categories and then see where it goes. I think in Jim's work with Salvation Army, Kelly didn't know which ones were the rock stars initially or where she should spend her time, but over time it showed up, right? And yep. I think with principals, I would say the same thing. Pick one or two, start there. You're smart. They'll figure it out. You'll figure it out. But 30 at a time, yeah, there's no way you're going to die.
Yeah, and I appreciate you mentioning department heads, which I think of as kind of the neglected or missing or overlooked layer of leadership, you know, where often department heads have been responsible for extra paperwork, but not really seen as managers, not really seen as supervisors, not really seen as part of any kind of hierarchy or chain of command, because we don't really like those things in education. But yeah, I think these ratios are very real. You know?
What's interesting is I think they like the relationships. They don't like reviews and hiring and firing and all the big stuff that principals get paid for, right? But they do care about their staff. They do care about who, you know, the rest of the English department. And this is a great way to say, yeah, you can do this. Here we go. Right. It's possible. So,
yeah. Love it. I wonder if we could talk, Jim, you mentioned personality a little bit, and I feel like I've always had people who had the personality that would just compel them to come and talk to me about anything or about whatever was on their mind or about whatever was coming up and just kind of run stuff by me or, you know, make sure that I knew stuff that they thought I should know. I can think of one person in particular that I worked with when I was an elementary principal, but, you know, several people just kind of in any school are going to have that personality.
Sure.
And other people feel like something has to be terribly, terribly wrong. And then they have to come with their hat in their hand and apologize for ever knocking on the door. Talk to us about how we can kind of respond to those differences in people's personality. Because some people just, like, if it was up to them, they would never talk to us. And cool. Other people feel like they need to talk to us every single day.
Correct. So again, it's like, it's kind of like, how often do you vacuum your house, right? You know, clean the bathroom. There's a routine that you get into, it doesn't really matter how you feel about it. You just do this, because if you don't do it, it just is a mess. And so this is a very modest, intentionally modest design that I link it like to salt shakers a lot. That it's very, they're ubiquitous, they're everywhere, they're durable, they're transparent. You can throw them across the room and they survive. And everybody thinks they're an expert at using them. And everybody expects them to be there. So 3Q is very similar, that you can get your hands on it quickly, start to use it, learn how to use it, and oh, that's too much, or that's not enough. And some of the questions are helpful here. The check-ins are scheduled regularly on both of our calendars, so both people know that this is, and they know that the person in power is committed to that check-in, and they don't get to opt out of it without excusing themselves to the employee. Okay, so the structure saves us from a lot of these personality problems, the lack of curiosity or the overabundance of it, because it becomes a routine. And also this, it's also scripted, Justin, where you're literally asking the same, you read a script every time. you routinize the thing. It's like, I'm going to start the check-in now, and here's what it looks like. And so that signals to the person a structure. You don't over attend to people. You don't Jeff, we want to go to the.
You want to go the
script,
other one?
The script itself, yeah. If we could, thanks.
Okay. Sorry.
There's a structure that you use in asking the questions that you, as the check-in leader, follow, and that enables you to not get overly attending to people, and also signals to them that you're listening to them. But if a person wants to say they're doing good, they're doing fine, etc., you go with that, and then a couple of backup questions. So let's stop right there. So let's go back to getting started, if we could, Jeff. So right here, this is literally what we give people, your instruction. You begin by reading the script out loud. Each time you lead a three-good check-in. Why? Because it formalizes the process, helps make the shift from casual conversation. It signals the participant that you're going to work on something together. It provides structure, safety, and helps you stay on time. And then it looks like this, and then you literally read the script. The purpose of this check-in is for me to hear you and understand you. I'll ask you three questions and take notes so I can remember. The context for these questions is our work together. The check-in will take 30 minutes or less. I'm not a counselor. You're not in therapy. This is not a review. We're doing relationship development work. Let's get started. And then each and every time you ask these questions, how are you? And then we can go into more of this if you like. But Justin, the structure helps us then stay focused and in context, so we don't let the meeting become something that it's not designed to be. You don't use a salt shaker to pour water in your glass. You know, it is what it is. It's not fancy, but it's ubiquitous, and it's a central part of what we expect when we go to a restaurant. So go ahead, Justin. If there's more, you probably know where you want to go here.
Yeah, so I think we had a lot of interest in that script. Is it okay to get back on the screen?
Yep, let's go.
And you said you basically just read that, or if you have it memorized,
literally
you it verbatim.
You could do that, and it gets a little redundant, and it gets people sometimes push back on this, but they generally start riffing, and I've been with people who've done this over years now, and so they start riffing. And they make it up and they can't remember it. I said, just get back. I know, because here's the deal. The person that's checking in with you, they're waiting for you to like give them attention, right? And when you start reading this, Jeff, could you go back up to the top a little bit of the, thanks so much. When you read this, you literally begin. It gives you a place to start. You turn to the person. It helps you stay on time. It signals to them, we're doing business. We're not chatting, you know, I'm here to check in with you. It's its own animal. It's its own type of meeting that we've designed specifically to exchange attention between the person with power and the person without it. And so you stay with, how are you? And sometimes people respond, often, especially at the beginning, we're good, I'm fine, thanks for asking. And they want, and then they're waiting for you to stop. In that case, you just write it down. And I'll show you what that looks like. And with like they said, I'm fine. And you move on to what we call a couple backup questions, which we provide as well. And I'll show you in a minute. Tell me something you're good. So you don't, they give you the one word answer. I'm fine. Say, hey, look, tell me something you're good at work that I might not know about. Somebody asked this question, a construction guy. They did this. I've done this with churches, nonprofits, construction people, restaurants. So construction guy. He's on a site. They're 20 minutes before they're going to start working. Or no, it's during the day. They work. Hey, what are you good at? I might not know about. Oh, I just got hired, but they forgot. They didn't ask me. I also have an electrical contractor's license, and I know how to weld. Nobody asked this guy. And that's helpful information. You just saved me like thousands of dollars, you know. And just by asking that one question, tell me you're something you're good at. Or what do you read? What do you, that? Then you go to how are we? Follow the same pattern. If they go into more detail, go with it. But if things stall a bit, move into the support questions, such as, hey, if you ran this organization, what would you change right away? This is a how are we question. It gets to the corporate, the organizational life. hey, what's your, oftentimes Justin and I preface things by saying, hey, you're a smart person, you know, what's missing here? You know, I mean, employees are never asked these questions. They never, nobody's telling them they're smart. What could we do to enhance community? The number one request, then when you go to how can I help? And oftentimes you want to say, other than money, you know, how can I help? Because people are always going to want more time or more money. And the number one requested thing in the worlds I go into is, can I have my own printer? You know, I don't want to have to go to the office printer. And so how can I help? You could also ask, what's a small problem you spotted that we should do something about it? If we could afford it, what kind of technology would you do your more job more effectively? I mean, people have gotten computers because of this, because nobody asked. They had it in their budget. They just, nobody ever asked. And the person didn't want to raise their hand and say, I need a new computer. And so we always take handwritten notes. And Jeff, let me just, if we could bring that up, please. There's an example. It's not on this one. It's on the next slide.
Hey, hang on a second.
Okay.
Everybody. While you're switching over there, I love the example of just basic computer equipment. Like, I think every school office staff member should have multiple monitors. I mean, they're so cheap. You probably have them sitting in a closet somewhere. But people don't know, they can ask. They don't know, they can bring that up and say, you know, hey, I've got attendance on one screen. You know, I really need attendance and the email, and I need all these things up at once to be able to do my job effectively. And, you know, things that we would, if people asked us, we'd say, oh yeah, we've got a whole closet full of old monitors that we know, you know, took out of the lab that we don't use anymore or whatever. And so many opportunities like that would be easy for us to identify if we were there to listen.
Hey, Jeff, I gave you the other note from Kelly Collins, if you can find that.
Yeah, it should be up. You should be seeing it right now.
This is my own version. This is a little, I apologize everyone for this. I had a second version of this. But at any rate, you're literally taking handwritten notes. You write 3Q check-in, that's my name at the top, the date, the name of the participant, and their role. And you ask, how are you? And you take notes like this. You take these notes like this, and then the next step in the process is you photo them and you text them to me or someone that's coaching with me, and we'd work with you, and that's it. And then I collect those notes, and then once a month you and I get on the phone together or Zoom, and we review the notes, and I help you think more deeply about what you're seeing here, opportunities. I help, this is where I do leadership development work, where I help you think about options you have, decisions you're going to make, and also spotting opportunities by asking questions from these kinds of notes. And so you can take that off the screen, Jeff. So it's very simple. We've taken this into a very basic level so that it can get done, because we had a whole computerized system. People uploaded notes, but it just created friction. Everybody's too busy. So I said, just write the notes down, take a picture, text them to me. We all know how to do that now. And then you're done. And then you schedule a coaching call, and we're set. So, yes. And so I'm Justin, you're in charge here, sir.
Good deal. Yeah, so let's see, we've talked a little bit about the script and kind of being, you know, being on autopilot for the little introductory script. Talk to me a little bit more about the listening, because I think one of the hesitations that we always have when it comes to open-ended, you know, I'm here to listen to you, is like, I don't want to necessarily promise to then do everything you tell me you want me to do as a result of listening. What does the, you know, the follow-up look like, or what's the promise that you're making in that conversation to avoid creating the expectation that, like, you know, I told you all this stuff that I wanted you to do, or, and you didn't do it. She got a monitor, and I didn't get a pay raise. Exactly. Like, what's going on here? How do we manage those expectations?
Great. I mean, if I don't answer your question, please bring me right back to it. By reading the script, you start by saying, this is not therapy. This is not a review. This is not an operation meeting. You clarify to that person. You also, one of the things that I've been coaching people to do is, when you ask, how are you, I add to that, how are you doing at work? And the reason I do that is so that while they may bring in something personal, particularly as they begin to trust me, I want them to remember we're here working together. We're all basically in a form of an arranged marriage at work. We're like in organizational relationships. We are put in mixes with people we don't know, we have to work with. So it's a lot like an arranged marriage where you just learn to like work with this person. And so I'm fascinated by the whole concept of organizational relationships and the expectation and the social contracts that go on between us, right? And so so that the script helps, the context of how are we doing it? We're talking about work here now. And if a person talks about the personal life, you say you care, and because we don't check our humanity at the door, but you bring them back to like, how are we doing here at work? That helps. When a person asks for something that you can't deliver, like usually it's more time or it's more stuff or it's more money, you simply say, those are issues you're gonna have to bring up with HR in your review. You just own it up front. That's not an issue that I can address right now, or I can't talk about that now in this context. And people will accept that largely because they're getting so much payoff in the rest of the experience that they're not going to, and there's always a random person that's going to go sideways on us. That's why we're paid the big bucks around here. Right,
right, but if I can jump in on this is the, I mean, and the literature backs this up, Justin, you probably have access to it. The number one thing that teachers feel betrayed on is not knowing what the principal was thinking when he or she did X or Y or Z, right? That's the number one way to break trust, right? If you look at the literature. And so I say it to my boss all the time. It's not that teachers aren't used to hearing no. It's that the decision got made and no one has any idea why we went that way, right? That's that. And what 3Q does, which is fascinating, is it's every couple of weeks or month, you're getting a check-in, right? You're getting to know at least as much as the principal can share of his or her thinking and legally and all the rest of it. There aren't very many surprises, right? There's not too many staff meetings where people are like, what the heck? We didn't, you know, those get minimized. Not, they don't get eliminated. They never will get eliminated, but they're much, much less prevalent. And I think all of us, if we know we're in an organization, there's going to be no's, right? You can't, I'd like $5,000 more this year for my salary. Sorry, Jeff, right? We can't, the budget doesn't allow it. Okay. Right. You know, I mean, it's, but the conversation is critical, right? As right. you know, I mean, that's, right. that when it's not there, that's when brush fires become wildfires.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problems that people typically bring that you, here's the one, here's the standards one, it's triangles. Yeah. I have a saying, triangles kill organizations, leaders kill triangles. And so generally people, the complaint is about someone else. And so your job as a leader at that point is to, here's a great story about monkeys. Jack Warner started Warner Brothers movies, sat behind his big desk with a cigar. Hey, what's up? You know, did all that kind of stuff. And people came in pitching movie ideas all the time. And so he just got used to people pitching him stuff and hustling him. And he said, you know, here's what I think. Everybody walks in with a monkey on their shoulder, you know, and what they are trying to do is put that monkey on you. And your job as leaders, make sure they walk out with that monkey. Right. And so you make sure they walk out with the monkey. So if they have, you have to become expert in spotting triangles and so you just send people back. Well, it sounds like something, here's your assignment. You know, before we do our next 3Q check-in, let me know how it went with that person. Right. That's it. See ya. And so you just become disciplined at not taking that person's job on for, it's not my job. Right, I have people that have gotten little monkeys they put on their desk now. They just let sit there and they see the triangle and they say, it's not my job. That's the primary request that comes from people, is to fix something else. And so it's been, it's interesting. A lot of great questions coming here, by the way. Thank you. It's interesting to watch the structure, the consistency. If I can pay attention to a question here, Justin, is that okay?
Yeah.
About
yeah,
teachers that are afraid to express their opinion, the leader might get upset with them. How do you solve that problem? It's consistency. by showing up each time and not fixing their problem necessary or not, and also demonstrating. I mean, people build trust over time, just like you do with the people you care about and love and like. You know, I have this other saying, when people like each other, the rules change. You know, things change in us because I trust you now at some level. I like you. Okay, we're good. And so then they start to divulge more information. And so they voluntarily bring that to you. If you are using 3Q to correct people, that's you're drifting into review land, operational land. It's a sacred, if I may use that word, a sacred a contract between you and the person you're supervising, that this is a meeting unto itself. You are giving that person your attention. That's the primary exchange that's going on. If you want it, that oftentimes, by the way, when people are busy, they have an operational meeting planned or an all staff, something like that, and they say, let's do our 3Q just before that. And so they do a 3Q, and it's coupled with that. So they're not, and we're going to, oh, that thing you want, we're going to talk about that in the next meeting, right? And so that's how they manage their time on that. Okay, Justin, if you take over.
Good deal. Let's see. Leo is asking a great question here, and I think this is very timely. We've had this webinar planned for months, you know, even before schools were closed, and decided to, you know, just continue with it because it is relevant to working virtually. But Leo is asking, would you modify the 3Q check-in system in any way for a virtual setting? So now, you know, if maybe you've been managing by walking around, you've been seeing people every day in the office or around campus, and we're no longer seeing a lot of people, if anybody, on a regular basis. How can we use this now? And what might be different in a virtual setting where we're on a Zoom call or a FaceTime call or something like that?
Can I jump in on this?
Yeah, sure. Yep, go for it.
I think this is, if however long your shutdown is going to go, this is the perfect time to do this. Because most of my colleagues say, I don't see anybody anymore, whether it's admin or colleagues or kids. And I'm not saying everybody's sitting around with nothing to do on the admin side, but there a lot of your teachers are struggling. I can tell you that. Just and if the way that you could potentially either Zoom call them or call them on the phone and say, hey, I'm going to write this stuff down and send you what I wrote down, could be unbelievable. Right? I mean, especially in the sort of attention famine situation that we find ourselves in right now. Jim may have more on the Zoom piece, but I know in the Salvation Army, they do most of this via Zoom. It's not face-to-face, just because they're spread out geographically. But I think absolutely, principals, any administration has the opportunity in the next, whatever you have left, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, to go for this. In a pretty interesting way.
I, in my age, feel justified in making sort of like blanket statements, one of which is I have never been in my lifetime in a window like I'm in, and that would include my parents were in World War II, and they would talk firsthand memories of that, and this is the closest type of feeling I've had to that, to thinking about that. I don't believe in our lifetime we've ever had the whole world shut down simultaneously. There's different ways of looking at that. There's 10% of people like, oh, OMG, I've got to, you know, run off to the hills. And then there's 10% of us who say, you know what, this is the greatest time we're never going to get this time back. We're in a 60-day window, in my opinion, April and May, that we're generally still thinking we're going to be shut down of some form or another, that people are available and accessible. Even people that you think are inaccessible, that may be well known, try them. They're sitting at home, generally speaking, and they won't charge you for their time. Try, honestly, reach out to them. People that have written books, people you see on YouTube, just start hustling and find access to those people, because they love when people are interested in their ideas, and they're not going anywhere. They'll brainstorm with you. So this is just an incredibly opportunistic time to develop and to leverage. I'm of the opinion, I have a saying, FaceTime is prime time. FaceTime beats Facebook every time, meaning if I can get in the room with you or I can see your face, it just completely changes the dialogue that I'm going to have either written or on Facebook. And that's because human beings, you know, some research I've read, we like making faces out of things. We like the man in the moon. You know, we, some of us actually, well, there he is. You know, when I was a kid, like I thought there actually was a man in the moon. Or I know one of my favorite stories is Jesus of the Holy Tortilla, where somebody, you know, cooked their tortilla on a stove and put it up and they thought, sure, they saw the face of Jesus. And they set it up and they made a relic out of it. And then people came and venerated it. It's a real thing. And so, you know, we like faces. So I don't think a lot of us, there's a lot of people that aren't going to go back, even if you have. So to your question, Leo, apologies for the long sort of philosophical lead up, but it fascinates me, this medium, what it's enabling us to do. I'm frequently on Zoom calls with 25, 40 people now, and I break them into groups and we do all that kind of stuff. So there's a whole world in that space to be explored. I think Zoom may prove to be to technology what TV was to radio, personally. I think we're going to go through a transition here for the people that adopt it. It's an opportunity. So I would become, if I were you, advise you become really good at this. Learn how to do dumb things on Zoom and figure out all your mistakes so you look better later on. I don't change anything. The only thing I'd actually change now is I would change if I would record my check-ins so that it would enable me then, the people that are coaching you, to watch your check-ins even better than reading your handwritten notes. I would record several of those. The process is so structured. What Zoom doesn't allow well to do in the computer is that you can't in normal world we talk over each other, we signal each other, but now technology it goes off, so a disciplined structured thing is really helpful translating into Zoom. I do another project similar to this where I let people talk for 2 minutes and we listen, and so it's very structured. 3Q check-in is very similar to that. It's a one person at a time.
The only thing I would throw in there, Justin, is and I've seen it with kids, is they don't want to Zoom if they've been on Zoom for 5 hours that day. Like when I check in with them, they want a phone call. So similarly with teachers, if they're on this screen, you know, for a good portion of their regular day, their teaching day, then as principals, be pretty granular, right? Give them the option of a Zoom call or a phone call. Yep. Because some people, I mean, Jim called me the other day and wanted to Zoom, and I'm like, no, we'll talk on the phone. I don't want to look at the screen anymore, right? I mean, it's exactly. So depending on what the rest of their day looks like, I think is an important good support point. Staff, maybe not, but teachers I know we're tired of looking at this screen after a certain point throughout the day.
Support staff, by the way, I have a special affection for support staff, from administrative staff down to janitors, down to security people, down to room monitors, down to whoever. All this applies to them. There are people in your system that could be doing 3Q check-ins with those people, and it would mean the world. I've got somebody who's coaching two housekeepers. He works at a camp in the middle of nowhere. His job is to do maintenance. He has a woman who cleans rooms and another person that maintains the rooms. And he's in his early 30s, and they're older than he is. He's doing 3Q check-ins with them. He's building a friendship and a connection with these people that he just would not have had outside of that. He's a young guy. He's just doing it solely because his boss is making him do it. But now he's seeing the payoff of them trusting him and attending to him. And he's getting interesting information from them as well. And nobody's ever attended to these people. So it goes all the way down through the system.
Yeah, and I think that's a very much worth mentioning. You know, it may not be that principals can right now check in with every support staff member throughout their district. You know, you've got probably tons and tons of people in different roles that make things run often out of sight. But this is something that can empower leaders at all levels. You know, you may not be able to personally check in with all of your bus drivers right now, but if they are
even an email that's not operational is welcome these days, right? Even a just, hey, I'm wondering how you're doing. I haven't seen you in a couple of weeks. That has huge power too, I would argue, in the time we find ourselves in.
Absolutely. Well, let's see. We've had a request. If you wouldn't mind sharing your Jim and Jeff, maybe your Twitter or wherever people can get in touch with you, email. And then, Jim, if people are interested in bringing 3Q into their organization for, you know, for themselves personally, or maybe across their district, or maybe for a certain department that is seeking to strengthen those relationships, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you, learn more about getting that script and coaching and the support to succeed with this?
They can email me at this email that I just put up for Jeff, but I want to make available to everybody. Excuse me. Let me, this is for, excuse me, I'm sorry, everybody. Where is everybody?
All sure, yeah.
Attendees. I got it. Okay, here we go. Feel free to email me, and I'll give you my cell number as well. You can call me there, and we can talk about the application you need and the way to get started. I'm a big fan of testing things before you buy them. So we have an approach you could use to be able to test this. You can also go to 3Q check-in.
.com, right?
And if you go to 3qcheckin.com, you can find out much more information. And Jeff, can we post the in the chat window, just post the script that I gave you so that they have that as an attach? Can we put that in here?
Let's see. I know we can do text. I'm not sure how to do attachments. Right. Yeah.
Okay. If you have a save file, sometimes I've disabled that too in this. So at any rate, you'll find, if you have questions about that, I'm happy to talk with you about how to move forward with that. And I do want to thank everyone who was present for your work, and for thank you for helping kids and for the work you do, and would love to help and work with you, be supported in that process any way we can.
Good deal. Well, Jim and Jeff, thank you so much for sharing this. I'm always intrigued by things that are simple and have a straightforward power to them, because I think there's such an untapped opportunity to do those things that, you know, connect us on the fundamentals as humans. And I think that's Jim characterized your work over the past almost two decades that we've known each other. So thank you for everything that you're doing to make the world a better place, even in these difficult times. Lots of nice comments coming in here. Jim and Jeff, if you have anything you want me to post with the replay, just go ahead and email that to me, and we'll put that right on the page there where people can grab that, and we'll put your contact information there as well. Just to kind of recap, we have been talking about having monthly check-in meetings just with individuals, not with groups. We've talked about doing this on Zoom for the meantime, and then face-to-face when that becomes possible again. And asking those three questions of how are you, how are we, and how can I help? Not in order to provide therapy, not in order to provide an annual evaluation, but really to listen and to strengthen that relationship between employee and supervisor, to kind of build those connections that may be getting a little bit frazzled now that we're not seeing each other as much, and that people are under different stresses. I think strengthening relationships is never a bad idea, and is even more powerful in times like these. Jim, Jeff, any final remarks?
Hi. No, thanks. It's been great.
Much appreciated. It was great being with you, Justin. Love the work you do. And it's been delightful to see this develop for you and the leadership you bring.
All right. Well, likewise, thanks, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. And we'll get the recording posted right away in case you missed any of it or would like to share it. Thanks so much. Have a great day.